Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 5, Cause of All Causes, Texts 31 and 32. Word meanings for 31. Taijasat, by the passionate egoism. 2, but Vikurvanat, transformation of. Indriyani, the senses. Dasha, 10. Abhavan, generated. Jnana Shakti, the five senses for acquiring knowledge. Kriya Shakti, the five senses of activities. Buddhi, intelligence. Prana, the living energy. Cha, also. Taijaso, all products of the mode of passion. Shrotram, the sense for hearing. Tvak, the sense for touching. Grana, the sense for smelling. Drik, the sense for seeing. Jeva, the sense for tasting. Vak, the sense for speaking. Do, the sense for handling. Medra, the genitals. Angri, the legs. Payava, the sense for evacuating. Taijasatu vikurvanat.
Taijasatu vikurvanat.
Indriyani dushabhavan.
Indriyani dushabhavan.
Jnana shakti kriya shaktir.
Jnana shakti kriya shaktir.
Buddhi pranascha taijasa.
Buddhi pranascha taijasa.
Shrotram tva grana drigdhiva.
Shrotram tva grana drigdhiva.
Vagdor medram gripayava.
Vagdor medram gripayava.
Taijasatu vikurvana.
Taijasatu vikurvana.
Indriyani dushabhavan. Jnana Shakti Kriya Shakti.
Jnana Shakti Kriya Shakti.
Buddhi Pranascha Taijasa.
Buddhi Pranascha Taijasa.
Shrotram Tva Grana Drigdhiva.
Shrotram Tva Grana Drigdhiva.
Vagdor Medrangri Payavaha.
Vagdor Medrangri.
Translation by Srila Prabhupada. By further transformation of the mode of passion, the sense organs like the ear, skin, nose, eyes, tongue, mouth, hands, genitals, legs, and the outlet for evacuating, together with intelligence and living energy, are all generated. The living condition in material existence depends more or less on one's intelligence and powerful living energy. Intelligence to counteract the hard struggle for existence is assisted by the senses for acquiring knowledge, and the living energy maintains himself by manipulating the active organs, like the hands and legs. But on the whole, the struggle for existence is an exertion of the mode of passion. Therefore, all the sense organs, headed by intelligence and the living energy, prana, are different products and byproducts of the second mode of nature called passion. This mode of passion, however, is the product of the air element as described before. Text 32. Yadaite sangata bhava putendriya vanoguna yadyantantana yudmane nashikur brahma vittanam. O Narada, best of the transcendentalists, the forms of the body cannot take place as long as these created parts, namely the elements, senses, mind, and modes of nature, are not assembled. Purport. The different types of bodily construction of the living entities are exactly like different types of motor cars manufactured by assembling the allied motor parts. When the car is ready, the driver sits in the car and moves it as he desires. This is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, 1861. The living entity is as if seated on the machine of the body, and the car of the body is moving by the control of material nature, just as the railway trains are moving under the direction of the controller. The living entities, however, are not the bodies. They are separate from the cars of the body. But the less intelligent material scientist cannot understand the process of assembling the parts of the body, namely the senses, the mind, and the qualities of the material modes. Every living entity is a spiritual spark, part and parcel of the Supreme Being, and by the kindness of the Lord, for the Father is kind to his sons, the individual living beings are given a little freedom to act according to their will to lord it over the material nature. Just as a father gives some playthings to the crying child to satisfy him, the whole material creation is made possible by the will of the Lord to allow the bewildered living entities to lord it over things as they desire, although under the control of the agent of the Lord. The living entities are exactly like small children playing the material field under the control of the maidservant of the Lord, nature. They accept the Maya, or the maidservant, as all in all, and thus wrongly conceive the Supreme Truth to be feminine, goddess Durga, etc. The foolish, childlike materialists cannot reach beyond the conception of the maidservant, material nature. But the intelligent grown-up sons of the Lord know well that all the acts of material nature are controlled by the Lord. Just as a maidservant is under the control of the master, the father of the undeveloped children. The parts of the body, such as the senses, are the creation of the Mahatattva. And when they are assembled by the will of the Lord, the material body comes into existence, and the living entity is allowed to use it for further activities. This is explained as follows. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Nena Tasmai Shri Shrutave Namaha. So after Lord Brahma told Narada that he himself wasn't God, started explaining things about God, how he creates this world. This particular section begins at text 21. The Lord, who is the controller of all energies, thus creates by his own potency eternal time, the fate of all living entities and their particular nature for which they were created, and he again merges them independently. That's a little something before that, mentions the three modes. So whenever we hear about the creation, of course we have a very elaborate description of what goes on in the creation. It comes up several times in the Bhagavatam. The details of how it unfolds are not always exactly the same. And it's a little hard to follow, actually. I had a plan to summarize what went on here, but I kind of got lost and couldn't figure it all out, even though I was consulting with, besides Prabhupada, his translation and purports, also Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Jiva Goswami. But still, there were places where I couldn't figure out what exactly is this all about. Some of these things are hard to understand. Actually, just like in this, it seems like something is wrong here. I think in this one, the purport that we read today, the first one. Actually, I heard a class by another sannyasi, and he pointed out the same thing, where it says here, text 31, the end of the purport, says, this mode of passion, however, is a product of the air element, as described before. Well, that doesn't seem to be right. The three modes of material nature, they're out there right from the beginning in an unmanifest state, and then they become manifest. So then air, of course, we hear about how the Panch Mahabhuta, the five material elements, they're produced from subtle to gross. And this is all because the modes of material nature are activating the Mahatattva. So air comes after the mode of passion, doesn't come before. It's not that passion is a product of the air element. So something didn't come through correctly there, it seems like. So anyway, in today's verse, we're hearing about transformation, vikurvanad. This is how, it unfolds. One thing transforms into another. Now in the first exodus, the last time I gave class, I think it was pointed out, mayaya, that this is not happening just by the energy itself, it's happening by Krishna's will. It's his power behind the energy that's making it work. In Sankhya philosophy, they think it's just happening automatically, basically just like the scientists think, it's just happening automatically. Everything that we see now, they say it just happened without anybody behind it, just randomly. You have somehow these material elements, and they, over time, they combine together and we have form and so on, which to me, the whole idea of evolution seems so completely irrational. It's amazing that it's, the dominant scientific worldview, that you start with inert matter, chemicals, and then you end up with conscious living entities. And form itself, I seem to remember that Sadaputta Prabhu has written about this, how you can't have form without some outside addition of information. Because form is a higher level organization. So how do you get form? How does this body have a form that it has when you start off with just, a bag of stuff? How does it form itself into something? So this is, modern science has this idea, but even Sankhya philosophy, they have Purusha and Prakriti, which are behind everything. But somehow it just basically happens. It just unfolds because that's just what it is. That's just the nature of things. But Krishna points out, or it's pointed out here by Lord Brahma, that there's an energy. Things are unfolding, but they're not unfolding without any supervision. There's someone behind it. Here Prabhupada mentioned in a purport about how Krishna is doing this to facilitate the jivas who are in this material world to help them fulfill their desires, and ultimately to help them get liberation. In the 10th canto, beginning of the chapter on the prayers by the personified Vedas, Pariksit Maharaj asks, it's kind of a challenging question that people have. How can the Vedas, which are mundane, they're just sound, they're just ordinary sound, how can they teach us about the absolute truth, Brahman? And the answer is the second verse. That's the first verse of the chapter. And the answer to the second verse is in the second verse. And when you read it, it's hard to understand exactly how it answers the question. But the basic answer to the question is that Krishna created this world so that the living entities could joy in it and ultimately get liberation. And part of the what is sort of written between the lines there is that Krishna has created the Vedas in such a way that they're useful for our liberation. They're not, in other words, they're not an ordinary sound. They're actually there for the purpose of our liberation. So Krishna wants us to get out of this material world. He comes repeatedly to remind us that we don't belong here. We belong with him in the spiritual world. And he sets up this creation repeatedly, over and over and over again. Every time there's a destruction, then we merge into the body of the Lord, the incarnation of one of the Purusha avatars. Then we come out again. So this is how this unfolds, this elaborate process of how it's unfolding. So here it's talking about, it says, by further transformation of the mode of passion. So what happens in the beginning, we have the material energy, and the modes of material nature are there, but they're in a homogeneous state. They're not really separated, they're merged together. So their characteristics are not coming out yet. So at a certain stage, but by the time element, actually, it's time that makes it all happen. That's why time is so important. Krishna says, I am time, because time, nothing happens without time. Whereas in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, as time, I destroy everything. But not only does he destroy, but he also makes things manifest. Time doesn't just destroy, it also makes things happen, step by step. So here it says, let's see, text 31. By further transformation of the mode of passion, the sense organs, so now we're hearing how the different modes, when they're separated from each other and they interact with the Mahatattva, then different things happen. So when the mode of passion is activated, these things come about, the sense organs. So the light, ear, skin, nose, tongue, touch, mouth, hands, genitals. So this means the organs for the active senses, the working senses, in other words, and the organs for the taking in knowledge, the knowledge-acquiring senses. And then also, buddhi and prana. So these are what the mode of passion produces, at least in this description. I think later in Kapila days, Or there's several places again that creation is described, and sometimes it's a little bit different. But here it said that the mode of passion is what gives rise to these things. So the 10 senses and intelligence and prana. So this is where, now what I find interesting here, now of course the word is here, I think, is the word prana? It must be in here somewhere. Yeah, living energy, prana, buddhi, prana. So buddhi and prana come. So what I find interesting is that prana is not listed as one of the 24 elements. I'm not sure why that is. I can't figure that out, why it's not. If you ever want to, there's an easy way, well, fairly easy way. If for some reason you want to remember what the 24 elements are, at least you get a pop quiz at the time of death or something, and you have to see. They come at, because we have groups of five. So you basically start with the four groups of five, which are pretty easy to remember. You have the working senses, and you have the knowledge-acquiring senses, and you have the sense objects. So there you have 15 right there, 5, 5, 5, working senses, knowledge-acquiring senses, and the sense objects. And then you have the panchamahabhuta, the five material elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether. So there you get 20 right there. So then you have the subtle, the antakarna. You have mind, intelligence, thoughts, ego, and then the last one is chitta. Chitta actually is, we don't always see it included in the list, just like in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna mentions 8, he doesn't say 9. But chitta is described in different places. Chitta, in fact, this is why I get confused about these things, because we're reading now about how this prana is created here. Now, it's also said that chitta is prana, and it's also said that chitta is the mahatattva on our level. We have the microcosm and the macrocosm for everything. The Sanskrit terms are samashti and vyashti. When you read the Goswamis, you'll see they use these terms. Samashti means the macrocosm, and vyashti means the jiva, basically. So the universal and the individual. So it's said that the chitta is the ahankara. The ahankara, of course, is universal. And that ahankara, when it's in relationship with the jiva, that's sometimes called chitta. But the chitta is also called the prana. And it's also called sutra, to get you more confused. You may not remember it. I probably spoke on the verse, that's why I remember it. But in the 11th canto, in Krishna's teachings to Uddhava, he mentions this word sutra. And what sutra is, it's a further development, a transformation of the mahatattva. And what it means is when the mahatattva begins, when it's activated, when it's touched by the mode of passion, actually, and it starts activity, that's called sutra. But that sutra is also called prana. It's considered synonymous. There's some intelligent devotee, much more intelligent than me, one of the disciples or students, a sixth-year disciple, of Gopi Parandam Prabhu, one of his students. His name is Gauripada. He has translated the commentaries of all the acharyas, basically that we have, our Vaishnava acharyas, on the 10th canto. It's called the Symphony of Commentaries. It's available on Amazon if you're interested. I have some of it in digital format up to like 33rd chapter of the 10th canto. So one thing he does is at the end of... So he's got Vishwanath and Baladev and Sanatana Goswami and Vira Raghava and a whole slew of every verse. He's got all their commentaries, the 10th canto. So he also does appendixes sometimes to bring out some further point. So for some reason, I don't exactly know why, I guess the point must come up in the first chapter. In his appendix to the first chapter of the 10th canto, he talks about this sutra, this term sutra. And actually, while he's not talking about it directly, what he's talking about is what's maha prana. There's a prana for this whole universe. This is basically what we're reading about here. It hasn't become individualized yet. So this prana, in that point, he quotes Sridhar Swami, who says that prana is the same as sutra. So again, you get back to this idea of sutra. So sutra is the active manifestation of the mahatattva. Now the word sutra, of course, means a cord or thread. So the idea is that it ties everything together. Besides activating things, it keeps things together, holds things together, the sutra. So this is about prana. So as I was saying, it's interesting to me that prana is not included because it seems like a separate element. Although I find it very difficult to wonder, what is prana exactly? We talk about the life airs. It's usually translated in Prabhupada's books as the life airs. I looked it up in this Sanskrit dictionary online, Monier Williams and others, there are several of them. And there also it's described that way, but it has other descriptions as well. And Prabhupada in Bhagavad Gita, he says how there are five kinds of life here. There's prana, and there's apana, vyana, samana, I forget what they are and what they do. But in the Sanskrit dictionary, it says it can be divided into five, but it can also be separated into 8 and 10 and 11 and 13. And there are different ways that it can be analyzed. Just like Krishna says also in the 11th canto to Uddhava, how the constituents of material nature can be divided in different ways. He says different philosophers do it in different ways, and they're all right, because you can just categorize them in different ways. So the life airs are like that also. But generally we think of Prana is just the life force itself, breath. Even in ordinary, you know, talk and ordinary thought, we talk about the life breath. A person is alive if they're breathing. Even like Lord Chaitanya, when he became unconscious at the Jagannath temple, so what did Sarvabhauma do? He put a cotton swab in front of his nose to see if there was any air coming out. So generally, if somebody's not breathing, at least for a while, they say, well, he's gone. So prana is considered to be synonymous with life, which is another thing that's always been a little bewildering to me, because you think, well, life is not the prana, life is the soul, right? We say the soul activates the body, not the prana. But in the Paranjan story, of course, what is prana? Prana is the five-headed serpent. When Chandavega attacks the body, when all the forces of time attack the body, the city of Paranjan. So what happens? It gets to be at some point this snake has to leave. And that's when then the whole thing falls apart. That's when the city is completely destroyed. So when the life breath leaves, then that's considered to be death. And we also have this idea, don't we, that someone, they breathe their last, or we say, you know, just stop breathing, and sometimes there's people, they notice something subtle going on. And another, of course, another aspect of this is that the prana, I think Prabhupada talks about this there's a verse in the, I looked up prana just quickly this morning in Bhagavad Gita to see how many references there were to it. So there's this one verse that's quoted. It's from the Mundaka Upanishad. It's in 2:17 of Bhagavad Gita in the purport. The soul is atomic in size and can be perceived by perfect intelligence. This atomic soul is floating in the five kinds of air, prana, apana, vyana, samana, and udana. It's situated within the heart and spreads its influence all over the body of the embodied living entities. So anyway, so this point that the soul is atomic soul is floating in the five kinds of air. You know, it's situated within the heart. So these five kinds of air, they're there, but they have functions all over the body. They have to do with all kinds of things, everything that's going on in the body. Sometimes I think it's sort of like, you know, in construction they have pneumatic tools. You go to a construction type site and they always have a compressor there. It's going all the time, making noise. And what does it do? It runs pneumatic tools. Like now, instead of just using a hammer, you use a gun, you know, a nail gun. Boom, boom, boom. So what's running that? It's being run by air. So I think, well, maybe the body is something, you know, maybe it's more subtle than that. But you can kind of relate to it in that way, that things are happening because of the subtle pressure of the air within the body. So it's not exactly air in the sense that we think of it. But although, of course, there is a relationship to it because, I mean, there is air, of course. Air is going into our lungs, and we're breathing, and we're inhaling and exhaling. And when you practice pranayama, then you try to control that. You try to control your breathing. And we know from Srila Prabhupada that we have a certain number of breaths. They're ticking away. And eventually they're going to tick out. When our breaths are all used up, life in this body is finished. So there is this kind of connection too. You can control it. Control your breathing, and it has to do with how long you're going to live. This prana is very, you know, interesting how it works here. So what it says here about these two in this first verse that I read tonight, so it says the mode of passion from it transforms matattva, part of matattva, into the ten senses and buddhi and prana. So then these are connected to two different things. The buddhi, how does Prabhupada say it here? First of all, his first line in the purport is interesting. The living condition of material existence depends more or less on one's intelligence and powerful living energy. So to live in this world, we have to be able to think straight, because the world is challenging. He says here, a struggle for existence. We're stuck here in this struggle for existence in these bodies. So what do we rely on in our struggle? We rely on our brain and our brawn, right? We rely on intelligence and we rely on energy, power, physical power, bola. Prashya shakti avividaya vishruyate swabhavaki jnana bala kriyacha. This famous verse quoted all the time by our acharyas to make the point that Krishna has his energies by which he does things. And what are the three main energies of jnana, bala, and kriya? So jnana means basically your intelligence. You have to, if you want to accomplish something, you want to do something, then you have to know how to do it, first of all. You have to have the theoretical knowledge, but this is what I have to do. And bala means you have to have the physical ability to carry it out. Jnana, bala. And kriya means you actually have to do it. You can't just say, yeah, I'll get to it later. But you have to actually do it. So swabhaviki means that part of Krishna's internal potency is Sarup Shakti. Is that he has these things. He just has to will it. He just has to will it and it takes place. In the beginning I was saying how this all starts with Krishna's will for helping the jiva. So, tadaikshita bahu syam prajayaya. So this verse from the Chandogya Upanishad, I think it is. It said, Krishna desired, I will become many. Eko bahu syam is usually the way, because it's also stated that way in other places, other Upanishads. I wish to become many. Eko bahu syam. The one wanted to become many. So, of course, he doesn't become exactly, but he manifests infinite jivas. So he also thinks, I want to help these jivas that are stuck here in this material world. So just by his will, then these things take place through his energy. This all unfolds. So Krishna's not directly supervising all aspects of what's going on here. It's a big enterprise, and he has subordinates who carry it out, and subordinate energies that take care of it. So especially these are important, the intelligence and the life energy, the prana. So he said. So then Prabhupada says, because these come from the mode of passion, as this is what the verse is about today, intelligence and prana are generated by the mode of passion. So Prabhupada says, but on the whole, the struggle for existence is an exertion of the mode of passion. So unless there's passion, nothing happens. That's why you have Lord Brahma. That's why you need the three guna avatars. They all have some function to play. So Brahma gets it all going, in a sense. Of course, at a certain level, his job is Visarga. He and those who come after him. No, there are two levels of the creation. The ten subjects of Srimad Bhagavatam, they begin with Sarga and Visarga. So Sarga is the creation of the 16 elements. So this is another place where I got hung up when I was trying to prepare for this class. I was saying, what are the 16 exactly? So what I found, I actually went through, I did a search on the Veda base, just in Prabhupada's books only I looked. And Prabhupada pretty much always, the list that Prabhupada gives is the five gross elements and the 11 senses. Those are the 16. So the five working senses, the five knowledge acquiring senses, and the mind, and the five gross elements. So these are the 16. So usually we hear that Krishna, or the Purusha avatar, Mahavishnu, I guess it's Mahavishnu, that's another thing, I'm not always sure which one does what, creates the first 16, or maybe Garbhadaksha Vishnu, and then Brahma takes over from there. He's got the 16, now I got my stuff, now I can create this universe. So Prabhupada always makes these 16. He states it as these 16. So the 10 senses, the mind, and the five elements. Earth, water, fire, air, and ether. But in the Atra Sarga Visargas Cha verse, the first verse of the 10th chapter of the second canto, where the 10 subjects of the Bhagavatam are listed, first the list is given, the 10 subjects, and then there's a verse or half a verse explaining briefly what each one of those is. So in the description of what Sarga is, it lists them differently. It says the five gross elements, the five sense objects, sound, form, touch, taste, and smell, and the five gyan indriyas, the knowledge acquiring senses, and the mind. So that list doesn't include the working senses. Instead of including the working senses, it includes the five sense objects: sound, form, touch, taste, and smell. So one thing, when I read this, I'm thinking, well, how does Brahma do it with 16? You'd think he'd need all 24, or at least, I mean, not 20. Well, actually, 24. It would seem like he would need all 24 to do his job. You can't create human beings without intelligence and mind and ego. Actually, the ego of the jiva is what makes up the mahatattva. Prabhupada explains it, and actually this is explained in different places, that the mahatattva, at least that's one explanation, the mahatattva is the conglomeration, the samashti jiva is the mahatattva. As again, these terms, samashti and vyashti. So the vyashti jiva is just us, each one of us within the body, and the samashti jiva is the mahatattva, or the false is the ahankara, excuse me, the ahankaras of the jivas is what makes up the mahatattva, and that transforms. So this is a very, you might say, a fitting way to describe what this material world is. It's nothing but our ahankaras. Those ahankaras are, and also our, what's the word? Our vasana. Vasana means the impressions of our previous life and our karma. All of these are bundled up with the jiva when the jiva is absorbed into the body of the Lord at the time of destruction. So these all come out with the jiva. So part of their manifesting is this mahatattva. It's made up of this stuff. Then the time factor enters in the three modes of material nature, then it all starts transforming. So this is all Krishna's creation. This is, I mean, I'm just touching on it. It's much more intricate than this. And different, in some of the different descriptions, you have other principles of material nature that enter into it. For example, we're all familiar with, this is one of the things that always confuses me. I don't understand what exactly these are. But the adhyatma, adhidaivik, adhyatmik, and adhibhautik. So we know these in reference to the miseries. We all know. We have adhyatmic miseries, we have adhidaivic miseries, and so on. We have these three. And I also know that they have to do with the demigods, the body, and the jiva. But the word is also used, and the phrases are used in different ways, applied. These three terms are applied in different ways. And in one of the transformations, in fact, I think it's related to the second verse today, in Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, he relates this to this adhyatmic, adhidaivic, and adhibhautik principles. Let's see, is that because, what is the verse? Oh, Narada Vesta, transcendentalist, the forms of the body cannot take place as long as these creative parts, namely the elements, senses, minds, and modes of nature, are not assembled. So somehow he relates this, even though the words are not there in the translation. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says this has something to do with adhyatmik, adhidaivik, and adhibhautik, and I couldn't figure out what the connection was exactly. So anyway, this is something about what's going on here. I was hoping to give a clarifying class about what this is all about, but I don't know. Prabhupada often, he takes it to the point of, what is this all about? It's about our liberation. It's about us being Krishna conscious. Krishna has given us a body. However he put it together, it's for our liberation. If you want to, try to figure out somewhat. Now, the other thing is, this is there for a reason in the Bhagavatam. I was just reading, there's the new ISKCON Communications Journal that's just coming out. Tattvavit Prabhu sent me advanced PDF copy, and there's an article there, a long, it's the whole, that's a scholarly, it's kind of scholarly articles, ISKCON Communications Journal. The articles are written mostly by devotees. So there's one there by Urmila Prabhu about, how we understand things. Hermeneutics is called. How do you go about understanding, especially scripture? So we run into problems sometimes because, it seems like Prabhupada said one thing and Acharya said something else, or just like I was pointing out, it seems like Prabhupada is saying something different from what the Bhagavatam says. So how do we approach all of this? So one of the points is that that we have this, there are certain fundamental principles that we have in our approach to understanding. And one of them is that the Bhagavatam is perfect. Our Shastras are perfect. And our Acharyas are perfect. And our Guru is perfect. And so somehow we have to, things that sometimes seem to contradict, we have to, not only her, but the Shastric Advisory Committee, they've been working on this for years. They've come up with all these principles and sub-principles and questions, and you ask yourself, am I qualified to try to solve this? And it's very, quite intricate. Her article is like 40, 50 pages long in this book. So this is part of it, is that we understand that this is in the Bhagavatam for a reason. So even though we don't maybe spend a lot of time trying to figure it all out, some devotees may do that, they have their certain purposes for doing it, it's good for us to read it. It's purifying just to read it. In fact, you know, just like Prabhupada would say, you listen, even if it's not even if you don't understand the language, there's some purification that takes place. He would say this sometime, but people would listen to his lectures. Maybe in India, he's speaking English to his students, and people come and they don't even understand English, and they're sitting there and listening. And he would say they're getting benefited by it, because they're speaking on the Bhagavatam, even if they don't understand. I remember listening to Prabhupada in India a couple of times. He was speaking in Hindi because of the audience. And I was sort of able to follow the class because of the verses he was quoting. Oh, now Prabhupada's making this point, now he's making that point. Because his Prabhupada quotes so much. Prabhupada's classes are pretty much one quote, one verse quote after another. And then using it to substantiate and using it as his liftoff point for the next point and so on. So these things are, you know, they're hard. They're hard to, on an intellectual level, a lot of times, we may not be able to do it. But we go through them and we try our best, and they come up repeatedly. You know, there's three or four different places at least we hear about the creation unfolding. So we follow along and do the best we can, and we know that we're getting some benefit from it, because it's one of the, these 10 subjects wouldn't be there if they weren't important. They're all leading to Ashraya. That's the point, actually. This, the 10 subjects of the Bhagavatam, they're all meant to bring us, to prepare us for Ashraya. Ashraya is Krishna, who is revealed in the 10th canto. So somehow, we may not understand, how is this acting on me? How is this affecting me? How is this purifying me to read about this? But it is, actually. Somehow it's helping to mold our consciousness so that we are prepared to receive Krishna in our purified hearts. All right, let me just read the translations again. By further transformation of the mode of passion, the sense organs like the ears, skin, nose, eyes, tongue, mouth, hands, genitals, legs, and the outlet for evacuating, together with intelligence and living energy, are all generated. O Narada, best of the transcendentalists, the forms of the body cannot take place as long as these created parts, namely the elements, senses, mind, and modes of nature, are not assembled. So this is the whole point. I didn't even talk about how they have to be assembled. But actually, I just want to mention, in some of the descriptions you hear about the devatas controlling these things, they're also created. So that doesn't come up in this particular telling. But there's a person behind each of these things. In fact, in one place it's mentioned Vishnu, and Prabhupada points out that this is not Lord Vishnu, there's a demigod named Vishnu. In fact, I think he's called Upendra. So, Upendra is a name for Vamanadeva, so that would be Lord Vishnu, controlling the grasping, right? Yeah, the hands. That's Lord Vishnu, the hand. And, but it's not Lord Vishnu, it's a demigod named Vishnu. So there are, you know, there's someone controlling all of these. I always think what a job, you're controlling the evacuation organ. Actually, the person who does that, his name is Mitra. And Maitreya means the son of Mitra, but I've never been able to find out if it's the same Mitra, if he's the son of this person. Who Mitra is, I don't know who Mitra is. Varuna and Mitra, they're always together somehow. You look up in the Puranic Encyclopedia, and they're somehow, I don't know if they're twins or what, but they always seem to be. They're always together. So anyway, so they're So this is also part of the creation where the demigods controlling these different functions, they're also generated somehow, taken over these posts. All right, let's all go home.
So anyway, there's a verse in the 11th canon with Uddhava expresses some confusion about sometimes things are described as 8, sometimes 16.
Yeah.
And he doesn't cover everything, but he gives that gist of it. And Krishna says, yeah, sages, they describe, so, you know, it's kind of like a little bit in this topic that even Uddhava is saying it seems confusing that sometimes it describes 8, sometimes this, that. I can't remember where that verse is, 11 something. And Krishna says, that's okay, you know, different sages, it's always the same subject matter. So I think that would more or less cover the confusion, because even Uddhava is expressing something like that.
The other thing is, Krishna doesn't have to do everything the same way all the time. Why not, right? He has some... he has his freedom to act as he wishes.
So, Prabhu, whose body are we talking about? Whose senses are being degenerated?
The jivas in general, all of the jivas.
But we hear that Brahma had Manas Putra, then Manu, and then some...
I understand your point. Because just like this body that I have right now, it wasn't created at this time. I don't know how it works exactly. Now Brahma, of course, he appears, he has the first body. But even his body is not as gross as ours is, so it doesn't seem to have all the elements in it even. Doesn't have earth in it. It's pure intelligence. At least that sometimes is explained like that. So prototypes or Sariputta Prabhu, and you know, he would all, of course, think deeply about these things. So one of the ideas he came up with is how everything is in seed form. Just like you create the plant by creating the seed, you know, it's in the seed. Which is another challenge to scientists. You say, well, just make a seed and put it in the ground and grow a tree. What's the big deal? It's just a little tiny thing. I mean, look at it, it's nothing. You cut it open, it just looks like some sawdust or something. So just make one of those and stick it in the ground and grow some mango trees so we can have some mango. But they can't do that. So there's all these subtle things going on, the subtle. It's a chintya, actually. Like Prabhupada would say, the lemon tree creates citric acid. How does it do it? It's achintya. Krishna's achintya shakti. Well, the jiva has achintya shakti too, because we're part of Krishna. So behind all these energies are achintya. They're achintya shaktis. So there are things that are going on in ways, how it works exactly, you know. The elements are all there. I was just listening to Gopal Champu. And when Krishna and Balaram went to get the son of their teacher, so when they went to Yamaraj, they said, well, all the elements, he's not there, he's not assembled anymore. Basically, his body's gone, all the parts are here and there. And Krishna said, well, just do your best. This is the way Jiva Goswami presents it. So just bring him here. So Yamaraj brought him, and he said, hey, he's all back together again. So Krishna made it happen by his achintya shakti, by his will.
You mentioned Mitra and gave one meaning of it. Isn't Mitra also one kind of friend? Yeah. But do you know what kind it is, Shigarangi?
All I'm hearing is vibration. Again. I can't hear distinctly what you're
saying. Oh, isn't
Maybe
Mitra...
Hold a little bit. Hold the mic a little bit away from the mic.
Oh, isn't Mitra a kind of friend?
Oh, the word means friend, but that has nothing to do with the demigod Mitra. I mean, maybe it does.
Oh, the demigod Mitra.
It's just, you know, that's the word.
I see, yeah.
That's one translation, that's one meaning of the word Mitra, yeah. Actually, pretty much all the names have meanings, you know, all the names of characters in the Bhagavatam. They all have. Of course, we know one reason for that, even in Vedic time, just like Parikshit, he got his name because of the characteristic he was going to have of always be searching. And Yudhishthira means one who is determined in battle, and all the, you know, they all have names that are given at the time of the name-giving ceremony. So how Mitra got his, I don't know.
Varuna and Mitra are Adityas. They are sons of Aditi. Varuna and Mitra are sons of Aditi. It's a common.
Yeah, they're sons of Aditi. Right?
And they're always together.
Yeah. Aditi has what, 10 sons, is it?
12. Adityas.
No,
12 Aditya.
12, yeah. Dwadasha Adityas. Yeah, Dwadasha Adityas. So they're among the 12 Adityas. When Krishna, after he killed, defeated Kaliya, so he was cold, so the Dwadasha Adityas appeared there. Now, sometimes it's taken that because the sun god is one of the Adityas, so sometimes it's said that 12 suns appeared there. Not suns, S-U-N-S. So it can be S-U-N-S or S-O-N-S, the Dwadasha Adityas. They came there to comfort Krishna after his Kaliya Lila. All right. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.